wrestling, isn't it?
So why don't we go ahead and get started? There'll be some other people who are maybe coming in later on, realizing what a great seminar they are. They'll probably come in later as we get started. But we're glad to have you here. I'm Woody Anderson, my wife Linda. We attend Westbrook Church here, and we're delighted to be with you today to talk about marriage. I was thinking as the group that Stu Weppert was talking today, Stu was actually a college roommate, not a roommate, but a college friend of ours at Wheaton College, when we went to Wheaton College back in the 1960s together. It was great to hear him again. But I was looking at the crowd and looking at all these men there, and I was really wondering when I looked at the crowd, which of these men are the really courageous, brave-hearted men? I now know you're here because you're talking about marriage. Everyone else talking about something else. This is the real job. Okay, talking about marriage. We're glad you're here to share with us a little bit today what we're talking about. So I have a couple of illustrations initially to kind of just start you thinking about some of the issues we're talking about as far as marriage. And fast forward your thought process to a little bit, say maybe, I don't know how many hours from now, 30 hours from now. You're with your family in the family room of your home, and the TV is on watching something. And it's the end of the third quarter. This is just a play, okay? Well, we'll see. But instead of the third quarter, the Packers are ahead 21-20. The Steelers have the ball on their own 45-yard line as the fourth quarter begins. So how many of you would have enough guts, testosterone level, whatever you want to say, to stand up, turn off the remote, and tell the family, it's over, they've won, we can quit? But how many of you think about that in marriage? We've been here, we've done a lot of this, it's over, we need to think about it more, because it's in the bag. Well, I'm not so sure, so it's an interesting thing to think about. The second is an example from I can think about from Vince Lombardi, who is not the fourth person of the Trinity, but is close. It's an interesting example. I think it's true. I'm not really sure it's true, but it's a story that I think probably is true, knowing a little bit about Vince Lombardi. In 1967, the Packers, of course, won the first Super Bowl. They played Kansas City. Do you remember the score? 35-10, right, okay. Very good, there's something wrong. Anyway, so in 1967, during the preseason, the Packers were having a preseason scrimmage or something, and Vince Lombardi was upset with the team, and he called a team meeting. And the team always knew that when the team meeting and Lombardi was going to speak, there were going to be some pretty bad things said, they're going to have a hard time. And so they were really worried. You remember the team? Paul Hornung was there, Bart Starr, Jim Taylor, Ray Nitschke, Willie Wood, Herb Adderley, you know all the guys, okay? They were there, probably one of the greatest teams, football teams ever. We think that in Wisconsin anyway, and probably true. And they were there, and Lombardi got in front of them, and they were ready prepared to have some really strong words spoken to them. He looked at the crowd, and he just said, "Gentlemen, I have just one thing to say to you." And he reached down to his bag, there, rummaged around, picked up one of these. He said, "You have forgotten the most important thing. This, gentlemen, is a football." And he put it back in his bag and he walked away. Now, for us, we'd like to talk to you about marriage today. And like you to think about that marriage is that football. How often have you thought about it? How often have you gone into the final quarter of the game, or how long have you thought about saying, "Well, it's over, I've done it before, we don't need to worry too much about playing out the string"? Our perspective is, after 40-plus years of marriage, that we need to continue reviewing some of these things that got us to marriage in the first place, and the foundational issues of what marriage is all about. So that's what we're here to talk to you about, sharing some ideas from ourselves, our own experience, and also hopefully something that will help you as well. So we'd like to think about four questions, and those of you who have the handouts, they're on the handout as well. We'll talk about them in sequences, Linda and I. One question is, can we talk? Second question is, can we resolve conflict together? The word together is important. Can we resolve conflict together? Third question in the issue of marriage is, are we having fun yet? And the fourth, kind of a foundation of everything is God the foundation of our marriage? So I'd like to talk to you about those four issues, thinking about them as you know, men dealing with the situation. Can we talk? Can we resolve conflict? Are we having fun? And is God the foundation of the marriage? That's the football of marriage. So we'll start off with talking about the issue with communication and talking together. And we'll like, hopefully, maybe at the end of the time, have some time for some questions and give and take and learn something from you as well. So first question, as far as for marriage, can we talk?
And isn't it ironic that the woman starts this topic? And I'm sure I know what you're all thinking. Uh-huh. We know who does most of the talking, right? But it's very interesting because as we were working on these four questions, I thought, well, you guys could be sitting here thinking, duh, you know, of course we talk. I've been married X number of years. But it's very easy to talk across from each other, to kind of shoot information through the air in your kitchen, but not actually be communicating, not actually being exchanging the messages that make a difference in a marriage. What kind of talk is going on? Is it just exchange of information, or is it a little more? Now, first of all, we really want to recognize what you guys already know, but it's important that we start from this. This is easier said than done. Because, yes, you do live in the same home. You should, theoretically, have lots of opportunity for talking, but there are all kinds of reasons why you really don't have that much opportunity. Number one, we're busy. Everybody's busy. Some of you are busy because you're working three jobs. Some of you are busy because you don't have a job and you're desperately looking for a job. Some of you are busy because you and your wife both work full-time and you can kind of just miss each other. Some of you are busy because you have newborn babies or toddlers, and besides being busy, you're excessively sleep-deprived. Or maybe you have teenagers and you're excessively sleep-deprived for a lot of different reasons. But one way or another, we're all busy. We actually didn't really exactly introduce ourselves, but for those of you who don't know, Woody's a medical oncologist. He was in medical school when we got married. He has continued until very, very recently to be on call like every basically third weekend of our lives and one night a week and long hours. We know what it is to be busy. But whether, no matter what profession you're in, whether you're job hunting or have too much of a job or you have job stress, we're busy. We're busy with all kinds of things. The other kind of busy is that there's a busyness that happens even when you leave the job theoretically and come home. Although in today's technology world, you don't really leave it because you've got all kinds of sources where people can be in touch with you all the time. But it's not only that. It's not only technology. It's inside our heads. Often we're busy when we get home with still thinking about work when we get home because there's stress, because there's all kinds of reasons why. I know very. I was just saying to Woody this week, I have a deadline for an article that I'm writing on ministry to moms, and I'm in the midst of frustration over it. So like 70% of my brain is working that through all the time, and that's probably what's happening with some of you with financial stress or that kind of business. We're also distracted from our marriages by all kinds of things. Number one, kids. Now, not all of you have kids, and I realize that, but if you do, you know immediately what I mean by distraction. Because whether that's a newborn or a toddler or a teen, there's constant stuff going on that takes you away from a husband and wife discussion and into a parent discussion. If you're parents, it may be your job that's 24/7 in one way or another, and you're never really away from the, you know, the smartphone or the email or the texting that's coming in all the time to you. Maybe it's your parents. So many today are in that sandwich generation where your parents are meeting you a lot of the time. And suddenly the roles are beginning to change and you've got a lot of extra responsibility checking on your mom or your dad or having them live with you or visiting them in an assisted living or whatever it is. We're distracted by technology. And sometimes I think technology is such a phenomenal tool, isn't it? Our world is completely different than it was 5 or 10 years ago. But it's also a tremendous, tremendous enemy of the home in some ways because you can always be connecting with someone outside your home. And isn't it ironic that we're often a lot more connected with our Facebook friends than we are our own family members? Or maybe that's more a woman thing, Facebook. I don't know if you, anyway, I don't really know. I work with moms, and they are completely, you know, addicted, I guess you could say, a lot of them, to Facebook or to various ways that they keep away or connected with their friends all over the world. That's phenomenal. Our daughter lives in Ireland, and in a lot of ways she's lonely in her parenting role, and friends are back here, but she can connect with them. That's great. But are we connecting with each other? And then we're different. Let's face it, men and women are different, and we communicate in different ways. I mean, like, differences 101 is that women tend, now I realize there are exceptions, to use a whole lot more words. And Woody is an expert on telling you all about that, because you can tell by the speed at which I talk that I do use a lot of words. And so we just connect differently. I love a quote I came across one time by former astronaut Michael Collins, who said, it's been shown that men, speak approximately 25,000 words a day. I don't know who counts these. I have no idea or if this is valid. And women speak approximately 30,000 words a day. The only problem, Michael Collins said, is that when I get home at the end of the day, I've already used my 25,000. Well, my wife has not yet started. Woody will spare me, I know, but he could tell you a great deal about that. But we're different in how we just think about a phone conversation. Now, again, it's possible that roles are reversed in your household, but more often than not, it looks a little like this. Woody's typical conversation with a guy that calls him?
Typical conversation for me on the phone, and maybe some understand this. One of my friends calls, and I pick up the phone. Oh, hi, John. Yeah, sure. Great. See ya. Bye. That's all I need to say. That's fine. I have a nice connection. We're going to get together tomorrow for lunch. We'll meet at the Water Street Brewery. I'll see you there. Nothing more. You don't need to say anything more. What else do you have to say? Nothing. That's it. It takes about 30 seconds. Linda gets on it.
You can imagine the difference. But, you know, it's, hey, Karen, how are you? How'd the game go last night? Oh, they did? Did he score any goals? Hey, did your daughter hear from the college? Great. And the vacation, it goes on and on. In fact, with one of those very real conversations that happened to be in a previous place we lived, and one of the other elders called and talked to Woody, and I knew the whole family. He got off the phone with one of those conversations, and I'm, oh, who's that? John? Oh, hey, how was their vacation? Did their daughter get into college? Vacation? Were they on vacation? College? Was she applying to college? You know, it's just a whole different, now he was going to see him, so he's going to get the rest of the story. But we communicate differently. So what helps with all these challenges to our communication?
So we have found that, and I'm sure for you too, you have to have some understanding of things that kind of help you get out of some of the doldrums where you're in. One of the times, really, thing is that we need to take time as men to be intentional to be able to talk to our wives. Make time. It's not probably just going to happen. You have to sort of define the time, say, I want to be able to do this, and this is an important person in my life. Soulmate, if you use a biblical expression, whatever you want to say about your wife, it's a matter of someone you want to connect with, and you have to make time, because if you don't, the natural process is things will kind of just weave away and you'll drift away, like Stu was talking about today, about drifting, the anchors in the San Diego Harbor for the naval ships. So you need those anchors, you need sort of an idea to kind of say, I'm going to be intentional about it. Now, I'm not a ice fisherman. In fact, I don't think I've ever fished at all in my life. That's a terrible thing to say, Wisconsin, I know. But I've never been an ice fisherman, and I never understood the goal of why you went ice fishing in the first place. Someone can tell me that later. But if you're an ice fisherman, you go out there and you put this thing on the ice, and the shack on the ice, and you bring everything there. But if you just sit there, nothing's going to happen. You have to be intentional. You have to intentionally drill a hole through the ice to get to the fish. They're not going to come up and talk to you. So the same thing is true with our marriages. If we're going to have connection with our wife, we just don't sit there. We've got to drill a hole somewhere and say, I am going to do this. And so, and in some ways, be creative about it. Doesn't that we spent a lot of time, actually, when I was in medical school, then an internship, when I was almost never home, spending some time in the evening, on Friday evening, between 2 hours, we sat down, had some tea together, and really said, this is our time. We're going to look at that time, keep that time every week to spend some time together and hook up at least for a little bit. Say it was intentional. If we didn't do that, I would have drifted off into my medical stuff. Linda would have drifted off other things. We could have missed the connection. So how that takes place for you as a man and a family will be different. Maybe you'll take your wife ice fishing. God bless her. Okay? or maybe you'll use other things. It'll be different things. Maybe it's tea time for us on Friday evening. That would be great.
I just want to add one little thing, because I would add that went on not just for medical school and internship, but for many years. I was home raising small children. He would come home late at night. And I'm giving the wife's perspective, but you may feel exactly the same way, just fill in some different details. But when we say intentionality and creativity, honestly, I really think our marriage could have gone a completely different direction if we hadn't been intentional about actually talking. I'll just give my perspective. I would have just gotten the last of our three kids to bed. I would have just cleaned up the kitchen. I would have just gone through the whatever it was, homework, bath time, bedtime, get the kids in bed. And it would be the first time I sank into a chair. I can just remember the feeling. I can remember the red chair in our family room. And I would think, phew, sitting down, this is a wonderful thing. And I would hear the garage door go up. It would be 8:30, 9 o'clock, and I would like to tell you that my heart leaped with joy because my husband was home. And so, to a certain degree, that I was exhausted. And it took, honestly, everything in me. I tell this to the women at Mom to Mom, to encourage them to do it, to get out of that chair and walk over to the refrigerator and get the plate out and put it in the microwave.
See, food is very important for men. So
not that he couldn't do that, but what it meant was I would then sit down across the table from him and make myself a cup of tea and actually talk to him. He about my day, to him about his day. And I really think that the natural inclination would have been not to do that. And I'm sure that you can fill in the male perspective on that. I'm sure he didn't feel like talking at the end of his day of talking to patients all day either. And I don't want to spend
too much time. Another thing is try to, in that process, if you can think of some of the things which would distract you or make it difficult for you to communicate, to try to eliminate them if at all possible. I think technology is great. Linda's talked about that. It is really good. But we saw an interesting family at a restaurant here recently about a couple weeks ago. And it was probably a husband and wife, or just the parents, and two children, and looked like they were teenagers. They were sitting next to us at the table across away from us. But Linda and I, as married for a long time, we're talking, having a nice time. We looked over the other table, and there were four people. All four of them had their iPads out. All four of them were doing this, and no one was talking. They're going out, let's go out, have a nice family dinner. Great, Dad, let's do that. Not a word was spoken to anyone. Were they communicating? Yes. Were they communicating with each other? No. And so that technology can be a great distractor, and it can be a great addicting distractor. And so make some time possibly to say, you know what, honey, tonight we're going to turn off the iPad, and we are going to just talk. Well, that may be hard, right? It's hard to do if you haven't done that for a while. But, I mean, that's a big distractor in our culture, really a big one. It's great. You can use other things, but it can also interfere. You can be doing two or three things at one time. Are you really communicating with your wife when you're talking about the stock market or the Packers game or the whatever it is on your iPad? No, I'm not so sure. That's the kind of conversation we really like to think about. So trying to put those things into place for you as an individual family to kind of figure out what are some of the distractors that we face, and intentionally kind of pull them back so that you can really have a conversation. So the real challenge then for understanding is that difference. I think also as men in the workplace, it's probably not just a gender thing, it's probably people in the workplace all the time. There's not a lot of emphasis in the workplace about how you feel. When was the last time your boss came up to you and said, John, how do you feel about this job? Is it meeting your soul needs? Are we doing the right job for you? Are you happy here? So we don't think about that work. Work is something you do. You have to do it. You may not like it. There are some responsibilities you do. You don't like what's happening. You don't like your boss. You don't like this job. But you have to suck it up. You have to do it. You have to bring the paycheck home. You have to feed the family. So our emotions get stuffed in a lower level. We come home. Our wife wants us to let her know how we feel about things. We haven't felt about anything in years. How can I talk to her about it? It's a big challenge. And so to have that connection with your wife and your family, you need to be able to shed some of those scales and get into something that many of us men don't feel terribly comfortable with, sharing our feelings. Because that's what your wife wants to know. She may not want to know exactly what happened to your job that day. She wants to know specifically how you feel about it, and that's how it's affecting you. So it's not the facts, it's the emotion. That's hard for us. That's a big distractor for many of us. It's for me, for sure. And so I think it's something to try to work with, too.
And one of the things we talked about is the distractors. I just want to clarify in your handout, if you happen to notice it, I think we said something about don't talk only about the kids. Obviously, if you are a parent, if you're parents, you and your wife need to be discussing the kids. But sometimes that gets to be all you talk about. And we can tell you that actually, though you may not believe it right now, they do grow up. And eventually they go away. And actually ours went too far away, and that's another story. We really miss them. But you don't want to be left with nothing to say to each other. And besides which, you will be much better parents if you have a good marriage. So we just meant not, we become so, our culture is very child-centered right now in many ways. And there are good things about it. But sometimes marriages take a heavy toll. I just see that happening. But I also think it's interesting because I do like to know the facts about a state, just in case you think your wife doesn't want to know anything except your feelings. It's not only that, but it is important. But sometimes we as women, we just need to express our feelings. And we don't necessarily expect you to be able to fix them, but we just need to let you know how we feel. And it's John Gray, Men Are From Mars, Women Who Are From Venus, I think, who wrote about how, the men are the Mr. Fix-It, and the women are, I just need to tell you how I feel. But a friend of mine told me a great true story, which I think illustrates this, and it might give you some comfort in terms of what your wife is looking from you in some cases. She said, the other day my husband came home, and I had the most awful day. And I said to him, honey, I had a terrible day, and I just need to tell you 5 reasons this was a horrible day. That I don't want you to try to fix it in any way. I don't want you to tell me what I could have done differently or what I could do tomorrow or what I should have told my boss or done with the kids. She said, I just am going to tell you the 5 things. I need you to hear me. And I just want you to say, oh, poor baby. Now, if you knew this guy, he happens to be a computer geek. He's not really the, oh, poor baby feeling kind of guy, but that's what she needed right then, okay? And so she said, so I told him. I told him the 5 things, and each time he said, oh, poor baby. And we were done. We went off to do the rest of the stuff we needed to do in the evening. I just needed him to hear me. And sometimes that's really, it's just, I need someone to know how I'm feeling, and I know it can't be fixed right now, but just, I want you to know that. So I think that that's part of having the real conversation, which leads to actually.
Yeah, so the challenge. From, we can have the handout there too, but the challenge actually for us as couples, and men actually in this situation, is when was the last time you had a real conversation with your wife? You don't have to answer that question. Just think about it yourself. When was the last time you had a real conversation? Not just exchanging facts, okay? Or statistics or whatever it is, but a real conversation. When you got right down into the deeper levels of who you are, how you feel, what your concerns or what your fears or what your joys are, that sounds overbearing and that's too dramatic. You know what I'm saying? But when was the last time you really talked with her and really expressed what you felt and how she felt and worked together? It'd be the challenge to do that. I think as men, I can just speak for myself, that's all, but as men, we have a hard time with that, I think, a lot of times. And our wives respond to the fact that we're working together, trying to see how they really feel and let us bring our guard down a little bit and let them know how we really feel too. We don't have to be the macho all the time. We don't have to have everything in control all the time. Just to express to our wives how we really feel, get together. When was the last time something like that happened in your marriage? If it's too long ago, maybe be intentional, see about maybe making a change and see what you can do with that.
Which leads us to the second question, because we need to keep moving here. And one of the reasons we don't talk well, or we don't really know how each other's doing so that we can nurture one another in the marriage, is that we really have unresolved conflicts. And conflict resolution can be a huge issue. It's actually a whole separate topic in many ways, but we do need to talk about it in terms of the things that as we looked at, okay, what has helped make marriage last and make it not only survive, but thrive, actually get better. And I'll say that we both have challenges in working through conflicts. I think most people do. There may be some people who don't, but we sure do. We can speak for ourselves. But a lot of those differences come from both personality differences and the family you came from. If you came from a family where, hey, we just let it all hang out, we just put it all on the table, deal with it, we might be more prone to what I've called on the handout the Rambo routine. Hey, I just tell people how I feel. It's just kind of a... There can be a lot of collateral damage to that, but it does get things out there. Now, neither of us happen to be particularly prone to the Rambo routine, but we have other specialties, don't we?
The other two that are there that seem to be appropriate for me specifically, and I think probably for many of us in this room, are the whole issue of escape mentality. Conflict is difficult. Conflict is hard. It makes us feel uncomfortable. It may make us feel un-Christian because Christians are always supposed to be happy. Okay, and I'm not sure that's true, but some of us may feel that way. So conflict is a hard thing. And if we were raised in families where we never saw our parents disagree with each other or always stuff everything down for themselves, we kind of grow up in the same pattern. I'm Swedish. A lot of you are Northern European descent. We're sturdy people. We're the people that we don't let us get us moved. We don't change in emotion. We just keep on going. Okay? Well, some of you have that feeling too. Some of you may be Italians. Oh, it's great. Okay, you're Southern Europeans. It's different emotions completely. It's very different how different cultures express their emotions. So we have to understand a little bit of some of those differences. I remember one time, the thing that really kind of marked our marriage in many ways, when I was in medical school in the University of Illinois in Chicago, Linda was teaching at a high school in the Chicago suburbs, LaGrange, Illinois, and we had some sort of a fight. I don't know what it was about. I think it was about what we had for lunch, some crazy thing.
Neither of us remember.
I was sick and tired of Franco-American spaghetti, and she put Franco-American spaghetti on the table. Or something happened. And we got angry with each other. Instead of talking about it, I just walked out of the apartment and down the stairs and said, okay, I don't want to talk about this. You know, the escape thing. Some of you have done that? Probably. Okay, you don't want to talk about it, just leave the room. So as I was walking out down the hall in the driveway, actually, all of a sudden, Linda stood at the end of the porch, and she yelled out at there, Norwood Ralph Anderson. No one knows my real name. But that's it. Norwood Ralph Anderson, you get back here right now. What do you do?
I'm back.
She who must be obeyed has spoken. So I went back and said, what do you want? She said, you never leave it like that with a discussion, the argument, where when we're having an argument in this discussion, and just drop it. We need to resolve the issue. And talk about it and understand where we're coming from. I said, okay, let's talk about it. Well, so the issue is that many of us have a mentality we're going to leave. Conflict is hard. I'm not going to talk to my wife. It'll maybe just kind of go over tomorrow morning. It won't go over tomorrow morning. You need to talk about it and communicate. The second thing is also that same kind of similar to that is the whole issue of stuffing it down. Man, I really feel angry with my wife. I really feel she's really doing something that really irritates me, but I'm just going to leave it. I'm just going to press it down like a trash compactor. Just trash it down in there. I'm not going to let her know how I feel. Then sooner or later, it's going to pop out like a jack-in-the-box, and then you're going to be in trouble. So some of us don't have troubles with that. Obviously, I do because I spent time talking to you about it. So the issue is being able to express that and to resolve those conflicts. They're inevitable. Put two people in the same house for a length of time, they're inevitable. So realize that the way to resolve them is to be able to talk together. Sounds easy. It's not. And it takes intentionality and to kind of work together.
And my particular...
My
particular specialty is sarcasm. It just comes natural to me. It's a wonderful gift I have, but it is not helpful. And it happens when I stuff it. It really, really does. And I know a lot of my issues, a lot of the issues we had to work through had to do with his schedule. And, you know, yet another phone call. Honey, I'm tied up at the hospital. I thought I was going to be home by 8, but it's going to be 9 at 9 o'clock. I thought I was going to be home by 9, but it's going to be 10. And I wanted to be a good wife. I really did. So I wanted to stuff it. And who am I to compete with a cancer patient after all? And so stuff, stuff, stuff. And then it would come out in a subtle side swipe or a cutting remark or a sarcastic comment when you least expected it. And that is just not helpful to a relationship. So the top tips I want to just run through real quickly for you came out of partially reading books about this, but partially just my own experience, things I was kind of talking to myself about things I need to do, and I think they help for all of us, that I needed to learn to be able to talk to Woody about what I was really feeling instead of stuffing it and work it through. Pray first is just always, as my mentor always told me, prayer is always the main event. When you're dealing with something that you need to talk through with your wife, you have different parenting strategies, you're having stress at work, you have issues over your budget, and she's overspending, and you're under-earning, and all of that, the way you look at it. Anyway, we have to be able to talk it through, but pray about it first. That changes everything. We're going to get to that in a few minutes when we conclude even more. But choose your time well. you know, I know it's a classic that women will hit you when you walk in the door just from work and you're totally stressed and, did you know the washer broke down and you should have seen the bill? And do you know what Billy did this afternoon? You know, it's just like, yeah, enough already. I just need a break for a few minutes. And I know that we're classic. I'm just saying, as a woman, at not choosing our time well. But just think about what's, and one of the things is if you do have a time, if you do manage to get a date night regularly, I know that's easier said than done, but even if it's a date night at home after you put the kids to bed, because sitters are so expensive, however you do it, if you have built into your life time that you talk, it's easier to find a time to talk about the more difficult conflict resolution other than, you know how it feels, honey, we need to talk. You just can't wait for that conversation, can you? If it comes that way. But if you're naturally communicating, it's easier. Always affirm first. Years ago when I taught English in this enormous high school in Illinois when I first taught. I was 21 years old. My students were 18. It was quite an experience. But every student who, it was Lyons Township High School in LaGrange, Illinois, if anyone knows that, but there were 5,600 kids. There were 65 English teachers, which is Woody's idea of a horror show. 65 English teachers in the same room. But anyway, we had to send a note home about every student who was not going to pass our course. And I had 125 students in any given quarter. And we had to write it out as to what was to give the parents a warning, you know. But our department chairman read every one of those before they went out. And he sent them right back to us with rewrite on them if they didn't begin with affirmation. I can still remember him pounding the podium. He was Italian and very expressive. There is no student about home. You cannot find something to affirm first. You can say something good before you explain to the parents what they need to hear. And it was just ingrained in me. But it, honestly, when Woody and I had our conversation about a schedule, to some degree it came to me naturally because I really admired the kind of doctor he was. I appreciated how much time he spent with his patients. But I needed to talk about my perspective on that. And sometimes, even though you think your wife is doing a great job raising the kids, but you want to talk to her about one aspect of that, or you admire how your wife is succeeding at work, but you're never seeing her. If you begin by something you admire or appreciate, she's going to hear the rest of it. I don't mean a fake that you make up, but something that you can truly, genuinely say. She's going to hear the rest of it completely differently. And then one thing that's really helped me is to try to speak in I statements. Now, I know that sounds kind of pop psychology-y, you know, but truly, the difference between my saying to Woody, you are never home. You have no idea what's going on.
You are such a jerk.
You are. How does that feel? It's like, oh, you become defensive immediately. But for me to say, honey, I am really struggling. I just feel like I can't do it every night without you. Is there anything we can do about the schedule that I can be home before the kids go to bed? I need you. I just miss having a real conversation. See, the I statements are so different than you never, you always, never, and always are always wrong. I mean, basically, but we fall into that. So how we do it, and then working towards some kind of compromise. We want to move on to some other things, and I know this is a huge topic, but I want to share with you a quick story that I've never been able to get out of my mind. It's just an offhanded conversation across my kitchen table with a friend. We were having coffee, and she was talking about her brother, whom she greatly admired. Her brother happened to be recently, well, on his second marriage. He had been divorced, and he'd remarried, and he'd married someone I knew. So I was just asking, how are they doing? And she said, you know, I'm kind of worried about my brother's, and I can't remember their names, but the marriage. She said, my brother seems to be falling into the same pattern with his second marriage that he did with his first. He hates conflict. He runs from it, so he never addresses it. He just stays away, stays longer hours at work. He goes on more travel trips. He just doesn't deal with it, and then he walks out. And she said, I see the same pattern happening again. He doesn't fight. He doesn't yell. He doesn't address the conflict, but there's a drift away from the marriage, and I'm afraid it's going to happen too. And I thought, wow, that's something to think about. So the challenge is, what resolution, conflict, or communication patterns might you need to rethink? And, you know, bottom line, this is a challenge at the end of conflict. It may not seem related, but does your wife get from you the message, I love you, I believe in you, I really want you to be everything God meant you to be? You might not say, you might go on and say those words. Maybe you can write it to her on Valentine, hint, hint, just a thought. But anyway, does she know those things? Are we communicating that? Is your wife more or less because she married you? It's just something to think about. Is she less? of a woman because she married you, because she's just kind of shriveling up, or is she more? Just some things. What messages, basically, is your wife getting?
One thing, with our children, our kids all went. We were living in Boston at the time when our kids went to college. Two of them went to college in Virginia. One went to college in North Carolina, and so they flew the nest. And it was in the early days of internet and email, which I said I would never have a computer in my home. That's wrong. But the
Swedish, remember?
Yeah, Swedish make these sweeping statements, which proved to be wrong in the future. But so we started communicating with them by email, which obviously all of you probably now do. It was a neat thing for me to do anyway at the time. And so with each one of our emails, we always would say to the kids, each time, every time, never failed, at the end of the email, we said three things. We love you, we're proud of you, we're praying for you. Every single email. We love you, we're proud of you, we're praying for you. Our kids, those things are branded into our kids' mind. They know that we think that about them, and that's a wonderful thing. But how about your wives? I mean, do they think the same thing? You're not sending emails to your wife, I hope. I've seen some people sitting in different parts of the sofa emailing to each other. It doesn't make sense to me, but I know that happens. Maybe it's happened to you too, but... Well, we won't go there. But the issue is, do they understand that you love them, you're proud of them, and you're praying for them? Does you understand that from your wife? It's a two-way street. Obviously, we're talking about men here, but it's a two-way street. They both have to be the case. And so how good are you at presenting that information to your wife? How often do they hear that from you? The third question we have is, are we having fun yet? Well, if you're resolving conflicts and if you're talking, what's the room left for fun? Obviously, in order for us to have fun with our wives, enjoy our wives, but just with any activity, sexually, obviously, no question about that, or other issues as well, we have to be resolving conflicts, we have to be able to talk to one another, and then make time to have some fun together. And just ask, sometimes the busyness of life, activities of life, responsibilities of job, responsibilities of what you do, just sap energy from you, and you have a hard time finding with just being fun together. So asking the question, what did you do in the past that you used to like to do? Well, maybe try doing it again. Some stupid things about compromise, working together. If you say to your wife, tomorrow's a great thing, why don't we go to the Marquette basketball game? Sounds like a great thing to do. Your wife says, oh, but the Boston Symphony Orchestra is in town tomorrow. What are we going to do? She says, well, no. Boston Symphony Orchestra comes to town just once a year. Marquette's got 25 games. What do you want to do? And you think, compromise. See, if I go to the symphony, maybe when you get home, I'll get lucky. Or something else. I mean, so what is compromise all about? I mean, it certainly, issue is, maybe give up the game, maybe she gives up the symphony, kind of work together, try to do things that she likes, sure. Hopefully she will do things you like, but kind of work together so that you can kind of come together and compromise in the situation. It's not easy. Okay, some of us have big. Tomorrow night, there's probably not a lot of compromising going on at the Packers game. I understand. Some things are non-violent. I understand. But some things you can kind of work with and see kind of what happens. So when was the last time you really just had a good time laughing together with your wife? Just enjoying her presence, having a fun time, doing something maybe absolutely stupid. Like making a snowman or rolling in the snow, doing something that people think is just absolute. Those people they need to go to the nuts or do something crazy, but just have a good time together and just working out together. Work that out. If the conflicts have been worked out in your marriage, or if you can talk together, then you have at least the possibility of working together. Don't take yourself too seriously. That's kind of the key thing. I learned that when I was an intern in Boston City Hospital in Boston many years ago. Real quick story, we'll move on, but I was working about 130 hours a week. That's what I worked, numbers, what I figured out one time. And there are 160 hours a week or whatever. Anyways, I was in the hospital a long time, a lot. And so I spent a lot of nights there, obviously. And one night I was there, a lot of people were sick on the ward. I slept right in the wards with the patients. Not a good idea, by the way. But anyway, and I went into one room, and I said, things are pretty quiet about 3 o'clock at night. Click on the morning. Please are quiet. I think I can probably get a few hours sleep before I have to report for morning duty at 6 o'clock. I did something I never should have done. I took off my pants.
In my own room, correct.
Took off my pants and said, I'm going to really enjoy this 2 hours. I'm just going to sleep in my underwear and just have a nice sleep. So I got to sleep about 5 minutes later, And I heard a loud voice from this nurse, who was an ex-Marine, who was, she was tough. And she yelled down the hallway, cardiac arrest in room 5. What do you do? You jump out of bed. I jumped out of bed, ran to the cardiac arrest place, jumped up on top of the bed, started resuscitating this fellow who was having a cardiac arrest. And resuscitating him, we put a tube in his lungs and did all this kind of stuff you have to do. And the nurse was standing back there, and I asked for some medicines, and she just was laughing. And I said, it doesn't seem very funny to me. I mean, do you think this is really funny? And she looked at me, and she said, at Boston City Hospital, we never call someone by their real title, but she said, Dr. Anderson, I would be able to concentrate a lot more if before you resuscitated this person, you put on your pants. So I forgot my pants and I went and got. Anyway, so the point is, ever since that time, I don't take myself very seriously. But I do remember to wear my pants every day. So not take yourself too seriously and all sorts of things is a key thing. And working together on this whole issue of laughter is a really, really cool thing to begin as well. Finally, the fourth question we want to talk about is God the foundation of the marriage? Which everything kind of filters down to this from our perspective as Christian, as believers. And is God really the foundation, and how are you working that out in your family, with your wife, to kind of work together to try to make God the foundation upon which other things are built, and which can help to resolve some of those issues of conflict, of talking, and of laughing together. Linda will talk to you about that.
It's interesting how, as we think about this, really, when we started talking about this, we said, okay, what are four questions we would ask, would challenge people with in terms of, making, not only just making marriage last, building a marriage that lasts, but it can really get better all the time. We can actually tell you that. That's hard to believe, but it can. That doesn't mean it's a straight line like this. There's lots of bumps along the road many times. But God can be there for you in an amazing way at all the stages and seasons, and there are very different seasons of life. We don't know as we look out at you what season you're in. Some of you may be just feeling very stressed in your marriage. Some of you may be currently separated or wishing you were or about to be or in great pain in your marriage. And we want to acknowledge that. And there aren't easy answers to any of these things. We're not here to give easy answers. But we are here to say that ultimately the one who can get you through all those seasons, who is the maker and sustainer and even the mender of marriages, is God. And you may be coming from very different places. You may be in a place where you're walking very closely with God. You feel very connected with him and with other godly guys in your life, like Stu was talking about. Or you may be in a place where you've just kind of been drifting. You may also be coming from a very different place than your wife is on this. Your wife might, appear to you to be just constantly trying to drag you into Bible studies and small groups and more things in the church, and you're kind of like, wait a minute, enough already, I have a full life. Or maybe you feel like you have to do that with your wife. You may be coming from different places, but just a really, really simple visual that I like to think about. If you think of God being here, and this is you, and this is your wife, if you're growing closer to God, you're actually growing closer to each other. Think about that. It's just very, very simple. But the fact of the matter is, as you come closer to God, it begins to change things in your marriages. I love what, there's a quote on your handout from Gary and Betsy Ricci, which I love. I love what they say. A magnificent marriage begins not with knowing each other. That is important. But it begins with knowing God. And the more you know him, the more you cultivate that life that Stu was talking about this morning, the more that you grow as a man in God, and the more that you can pray for and encourage your wife to do so, the more you will be moving together.
So one of the things that I think we need to understand, clearly we talked about it, there's a big gap, we could talk about it for a long time, is the individual differences that we bring in our spiritual walk as well as in our normal activity level and what we do differences. And try to bring those out together, respect each other's differences, don't expect your wife to be the same kind of level where you are, the same in the spiritual walk. Maybe have her not expect the same thing of you. To be working together, moving toward, in the process of working, moving toward God and toward each other. And working independently and be committed to each other, of course, but to be really have God as the foundation of your marriage. I think there's an interesting passage in the Old Testament from this, a very minimally known prophet named Haggai. Deep in the middle of the Old Testament, where people ever probably never go to the book or very rarely go to the book, he was encouraging the people of Israel to do different things and to make a change in their ways. And he says to the people in four or five times in a very short book, in two or three chapters, he says, give careful thought to your ways. What a great phrase. Give careful thought to your ways. And I think, so we certainly need to give careful thought to our ways as far as our spiritual life is concerned. Are we really doing things that will help us grow? Careful thoughts, obviously, to our marriage. We're talking about that today. But it takes intensity. It takes, like Stu was talking about this morning, intensity. It takes intention, intentionality, and some creativity. But the issue is finding that time, getting the issue, having, being committed, and giving careful thought to our ways. A lot of times as men, I have to speak for myself. I don't like to give careful thoughts to my ways. This is what I do, and this is it. I don't like to say, you know, how I feel, why they get that way. I don't know how I got that way. This is just the way it is. I'm Swedish too, so I'm concrete. So this is the way it is. Why is it that way? Well, that's the way it is. And so you don't give careful thoughts to your ways. You don't change. You're stuck. And so the issue is we want to try to break out of that a little bit and give careful thought to our ways and with what we do and how we relate to God clearly and how we relate to our wives as well.
Just some practical things that in working on in your marriage and just sitting down and thinking at some point, or maybe, I think maybe you think when you're doing something, but however you do it, as you give careful thought, like Haggai said, to your way, starting with your relationship with God makes all the difference. And many times as you begin to say, just pour out your heart to God in however you do it. I don't know. There are male-female differences here. Sometimes I do it in a journal. Sometimes I do it when I talk out loud to God. I used to be a runner and had back trouble from it, so now I'm a fast walker, and I talk to God while I walk. In Wisconsin winter, sometimes I just walk in circles around my house and talk out loud to God about the things that are on my mind. But he meets us wherever we are, and I just want to encourage you, if you've never really talked to God, and you're thinking, what is she talking about? Just saying, God, I don't know how to talk to you. And that he'll meet you right where you are. And you begin to say, I'm concerned about my marriage. As you begin, one wonderful thing to do is to begin, whether you do it and tell her or you just begin to do it yourself, to pray for your wife. It's a wonderful gift to pray for your wife. Not in the way like, I'm praying for you that you'll get straightened out about this. You know, there are ways to pray and there are ways to pray. But to really pray for her makes such a difference. And to pray about an issue you're having. You're just like this about your budget, about your kids, about whatever. To start with praying about it, I have to tell you that so many times Lord change him for me becomes Lord change me. As I ask God, what's really going on here? Don't ask it. You know the saying, don't ask any questions you don't want an answer to? Well, that's definitely true with God. Because when you start to say, God, help me to understand what the issue is here, it may come right back to you. And that's a good place to start, actually. It changes our perspective. It's very hard to really be like this with someone that you're praying for. So that might be a way to start. And even if you're not in a place like that in your marriage, it just makes all the difference. Understanding and respecting each other's differences and how you do that. Just being prayed for, just a quick comment. One of the things that I did with what I do, which is Mom to Mom, was a series of videotapings of talks to moms. And it was very high intensity. Some of them were done right here in the sanctuary of Westbrook. But I'd be taping four 30-minute talks in a day with like half an hour in between. And each one was supposed to be like a different week. It was high intensity, a very stressful situation. But every morning when I'd go out to my car to come out here to do the taping, there'd be a card from Woody. And many times it was a funny card. It was a hilarious card about someone who completely fell on their face or some crazy, crazy thing. Sometimes it was a little more serious. It wasn't necessarily sentimental, but bottom line, it would somehow tell me, I'm praying for you, honey. I'm praying for you today. It made all the difference. And usually it was laced through with laughter, because I love what Dorothy Sayers has said. You know, Christians can laugh better because we know the end of the story. We know how it's going to turn out. We don't have to be so uptight all the time about it. I just love that perspective, because as we grow closer to God, I honestly think he brings more laughter and joy into our lives. And so it doesn't have to be this, I'm trying to work on a relationship. It doesn't have to be like that. It can be, let's see what God will do as we pray about this and we pray for one another. Understanding each other's differences and where you're coming from. Don't expect her to relate to God like you do. I say this a lot to women when I speak to women, because a lot of women think men need to relate to God and talk God talk in the same way they do, and many times it's different. So I don't know exactly how it is for you. Only having been a woman, I can only give that perspective. But I often say that to women. Remember, men might relate differently. So respect your differences. And then find ways to worship and grow together toward God. And it will make a big difference in your marriage. It really, really will. You may have to start small. If you've never gone to church with your wife, or you've never been in any kind of a small group Bible study with her, or you've never prayed together or read the Bible, start in some really small way. Sometimes it helps if you're doing it, if you have kids still at home, to pray with them, to do some family devotions with them, to read a Bible story. Family devotion sounds a little intimidating if you're not doing that already. Read some Bible stories, talk about them, and that may begin. You can start small, but start somewhere.
So we have want to close. We have a few minutes. Maybe we have some couple minutes. Maybe have some questions too. But I think that in the conclusion issue was we think about giving careful thought to your ways. It's kind of a major thing we like to kind of be thinking about as men in your marriages. Are you talking with your wives? Are you looking at the issue with resolving conflict with them and them with you? Are you having fun together? And is God really the foundation of the marriage? I think four simple questions that, if you think about it a little bit, would hopefully help us build our relationships and our marriages better together. So back to Vince Lombardi. At the end.
It all comes down.
All comes back to Vince sooner or later. He held up the football to that team, okay, and said, you guys are not doing a good job. You forgot everything about the Super Bowl last year. Forget the Super Bowl last year. It means nothing. In 1967. We're a 1967 team. We're not the Warren Baking in 1966. We want to do something in 1967 that hasn't been done before. And you've got to get back to basics. You know what happened? The Packers won the second Super Bowl. They beat Oakland 33-14. They got back to their basics and their football teams. So our question for you is, these four questions are kind of basic issues with your marriage. Are you back to those basics together? Are you talking to your wife? Are you resolving conflicts together? Are you still having fun? And is God the foundation of marriage? Haggai said, give careful thought to your ways. Seems to me that's the best way that we can maintain the relationship we had together with the team that God's given to us, our wife and our families. So God bless you as you do that. If we'd love, we have a couple minutes to ask some questions. I'd like otherwise pray for us in our marriages. Should I pray first?
Yeah, because it is
time,
11:05.
Okay. Let me pray first for us, and then if we have time, we'll be up here to talk after we have time to ask you a few questions if you have any as well. Father, we do thank you for the fact that you have called us to marriage. We thank you for the gift of wives. We thank you for the fact that we are still learning. We need to give careful thoughts to our ways and thoughts to your ways. Help us to grow in our knowledge of you and translate that into relationship with the wives. It's a lifelong process, 40 years, 30 years, 50 years. We're still learners, we're all learners. Help us to learn. Help us to learn from you. And help us to grow in your love and your love for our love for our wives. Thanks to these men who've come. Be with them in their own individual marriages. You know the situations. Guard and guide and direct them, we pray. Look for your guidance in this day. Best is your name. Amen. I don't have time for questions now, but I guess we'll be able to move up here.